Welcome to Conversations with David Lewis. Today, AIDS in China and documentary director Thomas Lennon. Thomas Lennon has won just about every award a documentary director producer can win. Two Emmys, two George Foster Peabody Awards, two Writers Guild Awards, and he was nominated for an Oscar. His films include the multiple-part series The Irish in America, Long Journey Home, and with Bill Moyers, Becoming American, The Chinese Experience. With Richard Ben Kramer, he was nominated for an Oscar for his two-hour film The Battle Over Citizen Kane, which looked at the struggle between Orson Welles and William Randolph Hearst, and also The Choice, 1992 election film. With writer Shelby Steele, he's done two films, 7 Days in Bensonhurst and Jefferson's Blood, Battle of the Bulge, Hurricane of 38, Tabloid Truth, The Pilgrimage of Jesse Jackson, and other films make up the extraordinary body of work that Tom Lennon has done. Now he's doing something very different. His latest film is called The Blood of Yingzhou District. Tom, welcome to the program.
Thanks very much, David. Good to be there.
You have spent your career looking at some of the most important issues facing this country, very, very fundamental American issues. Now you're doing something completely different. Tell us about it.
Well, David, I think that the life of a documentary filmmaker always involves some accidents and some serendipity, and you sort of have to go where those accidents and those unexpected events take you. And in this case, I, who barely speak a word of Chinese and had done very little thinking and certainly no reporting in China until about 3 years ago, find myself deeply immersed in a project in China. And how that came to be is kind of one of those strange things that you learn not to fight, that you learn not to resist as a documentary filmmaker. Bill Moyers had liked my series on the Irish in America, and he'd raised some money to do a series on Chinese immigration to the United States. And based on my work on race and ethnicity, he said, look, would you do this, a series on Chinese immigration? And I, who kind of fancied myself as something of a immigration, like I knew a certain amount about it because of the Irish series, realized that I knew almost nothing about Chinese immigration to the United States. I knew that there'd been a law passed against them and not much else. And I got pulled into 2 years of work on that and absolutely loved doing it. And in the process came to know a lot of very, very gifted Chinese-American filmmakers who became collaborators over that time. And got pulled through, you know, Chinese immigration to the United States, unlike a lot of other immigrant groups, is very, very new. The great majority of immigrants to the U.S. who come from Taiwan or from China have come in the last 35 years. Hmm. And so to work with that group was to dip not just into Chinese-American culture, but into Chinese culture and Taiwanese culture and Hong Kong culture. And it was just a great experience. I mean, I know that you've done documentary work yourself, and you know what a treat it is when you just kind of dive into a world like that. Anyway, at the end of that project, we sort of had this pretty effective team, and we weren't particularly anxious to break it up. So we were sort of looking at what else we could do. And this woman, Ruby Yang, who had edited a bunch of the films, said, I want to do something about AIDS in China. And I thought about that, looked into it a little bit, and said, I want to help you. And that sort of was the beginning of our adventure. And here we are 3 years later.
Well, first of all, Tom, put AIDS in China in perspective for us. How serious a problem is it? What are the challenges? And what do we in the West need to know that we don't know?
Any problem that you look at in China becomes a terrifying one when you look at the numbers, because every number is so huge. We're talking about a quarter of the world's population. Any problem you look at in China becomes a problem of a scale that we as Americans have a hard time getting our arms around. You're talking of a population of 1.3 billion. And so the AIDS epidemic, which has not been very widespread there, is still unbelievably dangerous, because if it's allowed to spread into the general population, which is what in fact is occurring now, the numbers could really just be a catastrophe of a scale that is hard to imagine. The numbers you just can't even picture them. The numbers are so huge. Now, when we started 3 years ago, there had been a long policy of silence and a discouragement of the discussion of the issue. And so that's really what drew us there, was this awareness that there was a very, very big issue and that it wasn't being talked about. Now, around 2003, 2004, the Chinese government, which, as I say, had really discouraged any discussion of the issue, had viewed it as an outsider's problem, as irrelevant to them, as shameful, as behavior that belongs to groups that don't know how to behave anyway, which is to say drug users, prostitutes, homosexuals, groups that are not looked on with a lot of fondness, and therefore had essentially ignored it and had discouraged discussion of it. They had their own trauma in 2003, which is the SARS epidemic. And the SARS epidemic, which, as you recall, started in southern China, spread to Hong Kong, and very quickly transfixed the whole world and the world's media, and in which it became apparent to anybody who followed that story, and all of us did, even as just, I don't mean as journalists, I mean as citizens, because it was very, very scary how quickly that spread. And it became suddenly apparent for the whole world to see that the Chinese government did not, in fact, really know what was going on and was not getting reliable information from its people out in the field. So that while officials were saying that there wasn't much of a problem and it was well under control and that it hadn't really started in China, meanwhile, all of this information was trickling out through the new media, through internet, through faxes, through cell phones, of people who knew differently and who were frantically warning their neighbors and warning their family to get out and protect themselves and so forth. And the Chinese government, I think, said to themselves, "This is an embarrassment, and we don't want to go through that again." And the next obvious issue to tackle for them was AIDS, and in a really remarkable way, around 2003, 2004, the Chinese government said, "Okay, we got to open up. We got to deal with this. There's more to be lost by not dealing with it than by dealing with it." And so our timing was really fortunate, because just as we were developing material that could go on the air in China, the Chinese government recognized that they needed it. And that sort of was the beginning of our work.
But what is your work? You're saying developing material to go on the air. So what is it that you're trying to do?
What we did is, in collaboration with the great AIDS researcher, Dr. David Ho, this is the man who really is considered responsible for the cocktail therapy, in collaboration with him and with the NBA, we persuaded Yao Ming, who has a status in China that's even bigger than, say, Michael Jordan at his peak in the U.S., and we persuaded him and Magic Johnson to come together and do public service announcements about AIDS. Very simple. Just two great icons of the sport. One, of course, HIV-positive Magic Johnson, and the other, the most famous person in all of China. Putting their arms around each other, Magic Johnson saying, "I've got HIV. I've been living with HIV for many, many years." And then they shoot hoops together and they share food together. And the whole purpose of those ads was simply to say, to kind of calm the considerable fear that had built up in the Chinese population about a disease about which they knew very, very little, and which, of course, to the Chinese, no different from anybody else, terrifying disease when you don't really know anything about it. And so by trying to take the stigma a little bit off the disease, what we were encouraging people to do is to say that if you're concerned, come forward, get tested, try to get treatment, but first things first, let's calm the hysteria about the disease so that it can be identified and found. And that was a very big deal in China, because it was the first major AIDS campaign of any significance on Chinese TV. We don't know how many people we reach, but it's well over 100 million, probably several times that. And it coincided with the Chinese government starting to then build up a capacity to be able to test people and report people and track and start tracking a disease about which nobody knew the extent of. Now, the good news is that at the moment it appears as if the number of people who have the disease or who have the infection is at a, I don't want to say a manageable number, because no number is when it comes to that disease is really manageable, but it's not as bad as some of the worst case scenarios. That's the good news. The bad news is that the epidemic in China has spread from the narrow groups that it always starts with. I mean, you look in the United States, in Africa, you know, almost every part of Africa, it's always the same pattern. In India, the same, which is it starts out with groups that are so-called marginal, mm-hmm. you know, drug users,
right. People
sex workers,
needles,
sexually active gays. But then we know what can happen. Now, in China, the numbers are not too bad, but there is absolutely clear that it has moved out of those marginal populations and is spreading through sex to the population at large. And the other thing that makes China so dangerous and makes the addressing this issue so important is that in the kind of cosmic case of terrible timing, China is going through a revolution of freedom that includes both a freedom of movement and a freedom of sexual. It's like this is their 1960s. So just as AIDS is moving out of those marginal populations, you've got people moving around China. Don't forget that in China, 20 years ago, people were not allowed to move. You had to have a set of papers, and you had to stay within your area. And as terrible as that was for human freedoms, it's very good in terms of containing a disease. Now you've got, listen to this, David, 150 million people within China, internal migrants who have moved out of the countryside into the cities. They come as single people, men and women, and then they go back to their, often to their spouses, certainly to their family members in the countryside once or twice a year. So you've got a mobile population, 150 million people, and you have more money, and with more money that means more choices, that also means more commercial sex available, so forth. So highly, highly dangerous, and what's been very heartening is to see the Chinese government now really sort of stepping up and trying to get the word out, and we find ourselves, to our surprise, two American independent filmmakers being really welcomed by the Chinese Ministry of Health and helping them do public service announcements. We've done two public service campaigns, the Yao Ming one and another one, and we've got a third one in the third and a fourth one in the offing, and we hope to reach maybe 500,000 people.
Wow.
With these messages.
Little bigger audience than you're used to.
Well, I can't say that PBS has ever, in the United States, has ever given me numbers like that. No, but that's the thing about China. All the numbers are surreal. I mean, they say, well, exactly how many prostitutes, how many commercial sex workers is it believed that there are in China? People say, well, we don't really know, but we think like 10 million.
In the next segment of my interview with Thomas Lennon, more about AIDS in China.